Hello and welcome to another episode of 10,000 Hours. I'm Grant Spanier.
And I'm Vince Cochi.
And you are listening to episode 77.
Wow, did we record that whole thing? That wasn't like an error?
I think it was a glitch in the system where it sort of extrapolated that sound. It was crazy on my end. 77, sometimes that happens, you know? You get two S's, you get two sevens, anything goes.
77, the magic number, and a magical guest. We had one Ryan Booth on the show.
Yeah, Mr. Booth is a fantastic filmmaker, somebody I've been following for a while. We mentioned in the episode, but I think reading his Great Discontent article, his interview there is like a really good primer for the episode. It might have been one of the first places I found him, if not others. Really, really great filmmaker and super generous, dope dude.
And insightful, and we had an insightful conversation about culmination and kind of the winding road that a lot of our, be it careers, personal lives, or even a creative project will take before it reaches its final incantation. And what is the final incantation? Sometimes we don't even know. And so it was an interesting conversation about culmination, and he's just an interesting guy in general.
Hell of a dude. And actually, I should give a plug to his website as it pertains to our sponsor, which is Squarespace. We will show notes his website, but I believe Mr. Ryan Booth has built his website on Squarespace, which is a fantastic solution for you, and for many a creative person, as far as displaying your work goes and showing what you're capable of, or whatever your idea might be. Squarespace allows you to, quote unquote, build it beautiful. They really do.
There's no more simple, one-stop, intuitive, intrinsic solution.
I was trying to think of one. I couldn't. Use the offer code 10,000 hours. That's 1-0-0-0-0 hours. But one word still.
If you use that, you get 10% off.
Yeah. 10,000 hours, 10% off. I feel like there's some sort of connection there, and it's a great deal.
And just do it, because frankly, you're probably going to be using Squarespace for something anyway. So thank you to Squarespace for your sponsorship.
Thank you to Vince.
Thank you to Grant. And thank you to Ryan Booth for joining us on episode 77. Thank you, listeners, for listening. Hope you enjoy it. Mamma mia, mamma. The rain in Spain falls mostly on the plain.
Okay. So, Vince.
Grant, dearest Grant.
Sweet baby Vince, it's a real treat to see you. We've been on a bit of a hiatus.
A little break, because one of us was doing something very, very cool.
And I commend you for clocking in at that 9 to 5. And
doing come on. I'm sorry. That was no need joke. To do the rub-ins, man.
That's shitty. can we take that from the top? I don't want to appear like a dick, you know?
Well, I think it's a little late. But yeah, we've been on a bit of a break, a couple weeks without recording, which we do from time to time when something comes up, and something really cool came up for you. So I will actually start by asking you, what have you been putting your time into recently, Grant?
Holy shit. Is this a 10,000 hours first?
Maybe like a second, but maybe a first.
Okay. I don't recall it, but maybe...
It's been a while. A couple years.
We might have been drinking... Oh, yeah, man. We've been doing this for a minute, huh? I just got back yesterday from tour. I was touring with a guy named Gallant, who, if you're not familiar, we'll put him in the show notes. He's fucking amazing, this fantastic singer. He was touring with Sufjan Stevens, and it was just a super dope experience, like 8 or 9 days on the road with them. It was his first tour, and I was photographing him and kind of writing a story for Greener Magazine and doing a bunch of stuff. And it was just like such a unique, interesting experience.
And I was like so, so tired when I got home. It was just crazy.
I felt like a proud parent while you were gone. Uh-huh. I was like bragging to all my musically inclined friends, like my co-host and friend Grant. He's with Gallant and Sufjan right now. So maybe you've heard of them. Maybe you've heard of those artists. But,
yeah. And like I said, yeah. I feel like for a lot of people, it's kind of like no. Like Sufjan's an indie darling. But
yeah, he's a known name. Yeah, Gallant is, I mean, some friends of mine knew who he was.
What's exciting about him is he's like so on the cusp. Like, he's just like, yeah, I'm so excited to see where his career goes. And he's such a cool dude. It was like a fantastic, fantastic experience. I'm so, so hyped.
Excellent. And it's extremely unique and just interesting opportunity for you too.
Totally,
just
man.
Cool in every way.
Yeah. I mean, God, we started in Santa Barbara and ended in, I just flew home from Baltimore. So it was a literal cross country trip on a bus with like 10
you
strangers.
You were on the tour bus.
Yeah. 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 It was wild. Good stuff. So shouts to Gallant. You guys rock. Vinny. What are you putting your time into? I haven't seen you in a couple of weeks.
Well, actually, Bon Jovi called me up as soon as you were gone. And so, no.
You have a new podcast?
Yeah, it's the Jovi cast. No, it's called Java with Jovi, actually. No, actually, I've been really busy at the office. Nothing too exciting. The Animal Humane Society, a beloved client of ours, is going into their big donation push end of year. And now we are on radio. So my favorite medium to work in. I've been doing a lot of that, and I've been helping a coworker's friend's nonprofit about suicide awareness and prevention come up with a new name. They're Nameless, currently between names for their organization, and so I've been working on that kind of as a labor of love.
You're a very talented namer. We've said it before, but we've worked on a bunch of naming projects together. You, more than anyone else creatively, I've collaborated with on those.
I appreciate that. I love naming, and you're a pretty good namer yourself,
wow,
Grant.
Wow, man. What high accolades. Thank you. Speaking of names, we have a guest today, which is exciting. And I, as far as I'm concerned, he has a name.
I think that's objectively true.
Okay. But I think, I'm not totally sure. If you're in the filmmaking community and you're on the internet, I feel like this is a name you'll run across. This dude has put out a lot of stuff. And he's also been, which is what I like, he's been very generous, I think, in terms of like sharing his experience and his insights. I don't know exactly how I first came across this stuff. It might have been through a Great Discontent interview he did, which was great. Maybe we'll show notes that. And actually, that's probably good context for some of our conversation. But also, Story and Heart, friend of the show, episode, I want to say 42.
I think that's pretty close.
We're in the ballpark.
Can't confirm nor deny.
Yeah.
But yes, just video maker, storyteller, producer of all things visual.
Cinematographer, director.
The list goes on.
A doctor. It sounds like he's got a sick kid tonight and he's playing doctor, maybe.
And a family man besides.
A Texan.
Ryan Booth, thank you so much for joining us and for the opportunity to sit down and talk with you.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. So if I may, since you flipped it on me in the beginning, Vince, I want to ask you, Mr. Booth. That sounds funny. Mr. Booth, could you tell us, what are you working on right now? What are you putting your time into?
Yeah. Well, I work for myself. So, you know, there's usually like five or six different things that are going in various stages at any given time. So I am doing, what have we got? We sold a show to Palladia. Which is the MTV like music only channel that we are getting cut together right now.
Is that Cereal Box?
Cereal Box style, but it's like a live concert of a band that Palladia bought, which is super exciting, but just means that we have lots of crazy deadlines at the moment. And then I am in the middle of filming a documentary. Little short about a friend of mine who's kind of going through some stuff at the moment. And then we just shot a short film about this high school football player in this tiny town in Texas, kind of the documentary version of Friday Night Lights, basically, that is in post right now that we're submitting to festivals. And amazingly, just the teaser alone has gotten us a bunch of meetings in LA. So I'm getting ready to go do that.
Oh, yeah. Kings of Texas,
yep. And then I'm headed to Atlanta next week to do some Spotify stuff. Ooh. And then I'm headed to where do I go from there? I go to Austin, back to Austin for another like cereal box thing. So there's always like a handful of things, but
a couple of things keeping you busy then, you might say.
A couple things for sure.
Fantastic. I think you would be interested in a dude named Dan Hiding. Are you familiar with him at all?
I'm not.
Okay, he's out of Minneapolis, a filmmaker, but he does a bunch of stuff for Pitchfork now, I think. They do sort of in the same realm.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. He did a bunch of Bon Iver stuff.
Oh, yeah, Bon Iver. That was kind of his like entry into the
right. For sure. He did a Nightbeds music video that was very, very good.
Totally. Yeah, actually. You guys kind of have a somewhat similar. Well, I don't want to say aesthetic, but it just seems like kind of like the dudes, at least from afar. I don't know you as well, but you seem like you guys would high five if you got together.
Yeah, for sure.
Clink glasses.
Yes, exactly.
So, Ryan, clearly you have your hands and your creative talents in a lot of different cookie jars, proverbially speaking. But was it always this way? This is going to inform our topic, which I'll introduce in just a second. But before we do, I would actually like to know how you came to be where you are now and kind of frame the conversation around your personal journey. Because if I'm not mistaken, we've done a little bit of reading about your journey in the past, and it's kind of gone on a little bit of a winding road. You've gone to different places that brought you where you are now. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I'll try and do the relatively condensed version. But I am a guy who I'm interested in a lot of different things. And so, and I work really hard. Those are kind of the two things that are true about me that I know are true about me. As I get older, I feel like I, feel more confident in like the things that I'm good at. And the reason that I've taken a lot of winding roads is that I'm a pretty curious person, first and foremost. And then when I put my mind to something, like I don't want to do it poorly. So I work really hard and sometimes it takes me a while working hard in a direction to realize that I'm working harder than I need to be because it's probably not the thing I should be doing. I can confuse like being a fan of something with like trying to do it for a living, which I would say is the kind of slightly negative way to frame the journey, but the positive way to frame kind of the last few years, since I've been out of college has been one of kind of following up on opportunities as they open up and just seeing where they go. So I went to college at Texas A&M actually, which, if I could tell my 18-year-old self to do something different, I probably would, but it was really cool. And, I got really connected to the theater group there. I was always interested in music and acting and film, my family's big movie fans. Nobody works in film and television, but, it's kind of a central kind of connection point for our family, and interest in photography and all different kind of ways of expressing yourself essentially. And I got connected to the theater group at, A&M, met some amazing people and was considering moving to LA when I was wrapping up school, but ended up meeting a guy one summer who had a recording studio in Nashville who said, hey, you should come out and work for me. And I ended up kind of deciding to go to Nashville to do music. Did that for a couple of years. It was really awesome.
I feel like it's an interesting caveat that I think I read in the Great Discontent article, but like that wasn't not to derail us too hard here, but that it seemed like you were at a crux, right? You had that Friday Night Lights situation.
Yeah. So
I think that's an interesting aside. Yeah.
Yeah. So I auditioned for Friday Night Lights, and basically they said they were going to get back to me at a certain time, and if they didn't get back to us, then okay, fine, moving on. And that time came and went, and in the middle of it, this guy had said, hey, if you want to come work for me, you need to be here at this date. And so I literally was like, all right, whoever, like, if Friday Night Lights calls, that means I'm going to LA. If they don't call, then that means I'm going to Nashville. And they didn't call. I moved to Nashville, all my stuff in the car. Literally the first day I get to Nashville, I get a phone call from the casting director. Hey, we're really sorry. We got pushed back. Totally got the part. Can you be at the location at like 3:00 in the morning, or whatever? And it was one of those things where I physically, like if I had literally turned around to start driving at that exact moment, I wouldn't have made it. And it was already late at night, so I couldn't get a flight. And it was just like, No, I can't actually.
unable.
I am unable. And so what's been interesting is it's been this kind of a long, circuitous path back to exactly that moment, I think, which is I'm a filmmaker now. And it's what I always wanted to do. And but yeah, that moment actually kind of set me off on like a 6 or 7 year wandering in the wilderness, acquiring a bunch of interests and skills in a different way. I paid my due. I kind of joke around that I paid my dues in the wrong industry, because when I went to Nashville, Nashville is a pretty serious recording town, and I got a job in a great studio, and there were two guys who ran the studio. One was a producer who did a bunch of Kings of Leon records and all this stuff. And so I worked for the guy. My main job was for a different producer. We worked all day, and then he would go home at like 6. And I went to next door to this other producer and just said, "Hey man, like your demo reel is like a mixtape that I would just go bananas to listen to. So can I, like, I don't care what I do. Can I do something?" And so he was like, "Yeah, no problem. Basically, you're going to do a bunch of stuff that I can't say that you were doing, which is like kick replacement, replacing acoustic guitars. Like basically when a band comes in and plays, everybody's like, oh man, so great. Sounds awesome. Then they go home, and then like a bunch of guys like me fix everything for them. And then they come in the next morning. They're like, dude, we were awesome. It sounded so good." And so I did that like up until 2 o'clock in the morning.
That's insane. That's really cool.
Yeah. On some pretty serious records for a couple of years, honestly. So I kind of joke around that I totally paid my dues. It's like very thankless, tedious, boring work, that I surely paid my dues in the music industry. But I was doing photography as well, just for fun. There's a lot of downtime, when you're making a record. And so I would start taking pictures of the bands, and that went well. So I started some of the bands who didn't have a lot of money. I started doing their album covers, for them. And then some bands asked me to go out on the road with them in between records to do some tour documentary, similar to what you were doing, it sounds like, Grant, where, you know, go out for 10 or 11 days on a run and do photos and stuff.
Totally.
And then at some point, one of the bands was like, "Hey, can you shoot video too?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure, totally." And they put a DVX-100 in my hands, which is totally dating me, because it's a... Sure. Yeah, it's like a tape camera. And this was not that long ago.
My DP is like on the hunt for a new one, because his just recently broke. Oh, not nice. That he uses it that often, but he uses it for like skate stuff.
Yeah, totally, man. It's like a workhorse. It was like one of those. It was like the 5D.
It was the 5D of like the 90s?
Of the 90s, yeah. And the early 2000s. And so they put a DVX-100 in my hand. I shot it and shot photos and then, you know, video. Got back and they transferred the footage or whatever. And I looked at it. I was like, this looks like shit. Like, like my photos, I'm taking photos of the same moments, right? And I have these beautiful, like, digital images, and then this like grainy 480p like atrocious looking video, and I was like, that's, I'm not gonna do, like, I don't understand. I mean, literally, this is how ignorant I was. I was like, I don't understand why movies look so good. Yeah. And so so I just like put it on the shelf, forget it, and then literally the 5D came out, the Mark II came out, and I bought that camera for photography purposes. And Canon and Vimeo was running this short film contest, literally it's a marketing campaign to try and convince photographers to try out the video function of the camera. And you'd start with a still image, write and direct and shoot or whatever you want, a short film that had to be 4 minutes or under, and you would end with a still image. And then whoever won, there'd be a big voting thing, whatever, and then whoever won that still image would start the next round. And it was 7 rounds of contest, and then they brought all the chapter winners together to do the final kind of collective film in L.A. And a friend of mine was just like, you should do it, man. It's pretty fun. And I ended up winning my chapter. And so they flew me out to LA. It was 3 days on set. I can't remember the budget. It was several hundred thousand dollar budget. And they had, 10 semis around, 100 people on set running around like crazy. And I literally just was like, I'm home. This is it. Like, I had no idea. I'd never seen a set like that before. I had no idea what I was missing, but I literally just felt like, I don't care what I have to do to get back here. I am coming back here. And so I remember I was sitting with the producer at the wrap party, and me and a couple of the other guys were like, hey man, like, so how can we get back here? Like, this is incredible. And she was like, you know what? What you're gonna have to do is go home, wherever you're from, I don't know who you are, and go home and make stuff for the next 5 years and put it on the internet, and eventually it won't be terrible, and eventually it'll be good, and then we'll call you and bring you back out for a project. Which, you know, of course I was like, yeah, great. I meant, like, how can I come back out here tomorrow? But she basically, long story short, it's been about 5 years, and I'm getting called out to do that kind of stuff now. And
the prophecy has been foretold.
Dude, she was an amazing person, and she was completely right.
To be fair, you did pay her $40, and she did have one of those sets of cards.
Tarot.
She laid out.
And yeah. Right. I just met her walking around downtown LA.
Yeah.
She said she was a producer.
Was a loose
term. So I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
Producer/psychic.
Yeah, exactly.
But you touched on so many important and just insightful.
Should we just call it?
Should just wrap the show. I think now is a great time to just do a cold break into the topic, and it's culmination. And you have described to us the culmination of events, both that led you to understand your true passion, and now in a secondary stage that have brought you to kind of fulfilling this thing that this woman said to you on that fateful day. And now you are realizing your talent, your passion, and it's starting to pay dividends. When we talk about culmination, it can kind of skew in a few different ways. What I'm most interested about right now is that people don't usually get such a visceral, obvious fork in the road as you had. You had basically the choice between acting and sound production. Mm-hmm. And fate kind of threw you one way. But now that you've taken the road less traveled and come back to your passion, how do you think your time, as you put it, putting in your time, paying your dues in an industry that wasn't right for you, how do you think it's affected positively or negatively your approach to your actual passion?
I think it's a couple things. The first is that structurally it's not dramatically different. So the things that I learned from working for the producer that I worked for in the recording studio was the idea of working for yourself, number one, not being terrified of where the next, like, you know, I still to this day, like, I have a decent idea what I'm doing at the beginning of December, but like beyond that I have no idea. So I'm usually about 4 to 6 weeks out that I've kind of have my calendar booked. And of course it flexes and whatever, but I learned that from him. I learned that, you know, when I was doing the recording studio stuff. And so, like, working on a project schedule, working for yourself, like, basically having to consistently meet and interact with strangers, and while at the same time, you know, a lot of the same players would come in and play certain parts, like the producer had his kind of go-to guys. And that's very common now. I meet strangers all the time, but I try and work with a handful of guys that, you know, we've put in several years of time together so that, you know, it just makes our sets us able to work faster and to get to know people quicker and all that kind of thing. So a lot of that I learned, that's transferable skill set and knowledge. But I think what I learned most was the reason I knew I wasn't supposed to be an engineer is because when shit wasn't working, I didn't know how to fix it. And so I would, like, if things weren't working, whether that be a performance or a technical issue or, like, just something that was happening that, like, because that's inevitable in any kind of creative endeavor, that, like, things aren't going to work all the time. And when I would hit that wall, I literally would be like, I don't know. I would be fine. I would be relieved if like we could just go home right now. And I found that, and I didn't know, I wasn't able to articulate that feeling until I got into filmmaking and found when things weren't working that I doubled down, that I was, mm-hmm. I was interested and able to solve problems for much, much longer at the very beginning than I was able to in recording and music. And I feel like that has been something that if I had not kind of been doing something different than what I really feel kind of best at and kind of called to do, more or less, I wouldn't have known. I wouldn't have had such clarity without that, basically.
Certainly. I will say, first off, I think in some ways you're my spirit animal. Like, I was nodding quite a bit, like, pretty vigorously there. Just because I think a lot of this stuff, it seems that we share mentality or sort of philosophy on, which is, like, these transferable skill sets, this, like, overlapping of skill sets and how they sort of evolve and they feed into and culminate into, you know, that ultimate thing, which is filmmaking in a lot of ways for me too. Oh yeah. And then on top of that, just like the kind of family vibe, and I've started to see that more and more across industries, but yeah, I have like my kind of crew that I work with specifically. I'll try people out on new stuff, things that are maybe lower stakes, but if I know we got to bring it, like I have the go-to people. You have the specific collaborators.
Yeah, totally. And I noticed that when I was a kid, I would, because I would obsessively watch the credits, like, movies. And you just start, you see the same names, you know, working with the same people over and over again. And I always, even when I was little, was like, I don't understand. That's interesting. Like, that's just interesting that you would see the same people. And now it's like, that's 100% true. It's critical, even.
And then on top of that, I think something that's super, super important, and it's kind of at the crux of a lot of what we're getting at with the show and in a lot of our conversations, we talk about self-awareness in terms of like tapping into who you are, what you want. But I have felt that same thing. And I think when people feel that thing, it's so obvious. The thing you're talking about, which is that like kernel of motivation. It's to say like, oh, I want to see the final product of this thing in the best possible form more than I want anything else, pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, and there's some things that you do, you try, whether that's a discipline or whatever, but you're like, oh, I could go home, right? Exactly what you said. Like, I could be doing something else. But there are other things where it's like, I can't stop until this is, like, fully realized.
Yep.
And that's like fucking, that's the game.
That's it, man. And I mean, cause you know, I remember when I was 18, a family friend of a friend was a National Geographic photographer, and I was, you know, exploring at the times, love photography. So I sent her an email and was like, how do you become a National Geographic photographer? Cause that sounds awesome. And she said, the first thing that you do is you have to fall in love with the process of being a photographer, not the final end goal, which would be being a National Geographic photographer. Cause in all likelihood, you'll get there and you'll hate it. And then what? Like, you've been building towards something that when you get there, you're disillusioned and you throw the whole thing away. And that's not the point. The point is not the, like, the milestones are encouragement to keep going. They're not the destination or goal in and of themselves. And that is something that, like, of course, again, my 18-year-old self was like, whatever, you're a National Geographic photographer. Like, that's easy for you to say, right? But I do think, man, there's something true about it. And I feel like that as I've gotten older and a little bit less interested in being cool, which I would say, kind of throwing back to the beginning of the conversation, I was concerned at the beginning with, like, doing something cool. And I've become less and less interested in that, and I feel like that has been directly in proportion to me figuring out what it is that I really, like, truly am you know, meant to be doing. For me,
this is interesting ground to tread. We've talked about motivations, doing things for the right reason before on the show, always leads to cool introspective moments. I'm kind of reminded of a modern idiom where the dog that chases the car doesn't know what he would do if he finally, you know, caught the wheel.
Sure.
Doesn't make a lot of sense in context, but basically there's an idea and there's some merit to the idea that figuring out what you actually want to do in this planet and in this life can lend meaning in and of itself to the journey. And figuring it out and finding yourself can be an ongoing process. Was there any moment of sort of relapse or kind of confusion, being lost, feeling lost, when you finally settled on the fact that you would be a filmmaker and you knew that's where you're supposed to be? Were you kind of like, where do I go from here now? Or was it more contentment?
No. Well, I will say it's both and, right? It's not either or. On any given day, I can be both content with where I am, knowing that I'm supposed to be doing this, feeling confident about that, and going like, what the fuck am I supposed to be doing right now? That those two things are not mutually exclusive. And I think that it's been a process. You know, basically, I knew I was late to the game in filmmaking, because I wasn't an 18-year-old kid who like always knew he wanted to be a filmmaker and went to USC, and you know what I mean, like I am not the guy who like from the beginning was like, this
made,
is what I I'm gonna
home
do
videos and like oh,
yeah
okay,
totally the like the, that exactly yeah, sure. That very like there's that mythology, right? Like I've always done this, I'm always supposed to do this, whatever. I knew I was late, and so I just said yes to everything for a little while, you know, and at the same time started doing personal work immediately. And so the two of those things led me to a lot of work really quickly. And I would say it was 2 years of completely like, non-introspective. Yeah, no problem. I can do that. And it not being that great, people not seeing a lot of what I was working on. But you know, just literally like 2 years of broad strokes to just try and catch up a bit. And then it was another 2 years of, okay, I feel like I'm not horrible at this. I'm starting to put some stuff out that people think is kind of cool, but it's nothing that's like, you know, nobody's calling me saying like, hey, I have the keys to a kingdom, would you like to have them? And so
does anyone ever call and say that?
Got a couple of keys here. What yeah. says Raibu on it?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if you want to come out here. And yeah, no, I didn't have any, like, it wasn't, you know, I mean, enough, there's enough momentum to like sustain, but not anything crazy by any means. And then I would say about a year ago, had a complete and total just like existential like career crisis, which was, what am I doing? I've been DPing this stuff. A lot of my peers, the guys that you know, I would call my peers, are starting to get big opportunities. They're signing with production companies. They're getting agents. They're booking jobs that like everybody sees what they're doing, and like I'm kind of just slogging it out here, still not feeling like things are clicking that great. I think I'm a DP, maybe I'm a director, I don't really know, like you know, whatever. And like really, I think the last year for me has been pretty tough, feeling like I don't know what's next. In a lot of ways, like feel like my work has come to me and I have not had to be super proactive about it, and feeling like that was ending. That I was good enough to just get work for a while, and now I'm getting into the place where I'm going to have to differentiate, to go out and be proactive. And I didn't know how to do that, what that looked like. I didn't even know what specifically, because, you know, you narrow, kind of as you get better and more sophisticated in your technique and your talent and your abilities and the people that you know and your taste and all that stuff. And pretty soon you start looking around going like, I'm competing against a smaller and smaller group of people, but they're really good. Yeah. And so like, now what? And so I think for me, a big moment has been, I shot a film with a director named Elliot Rausch, who is,
certainly familiar.
He will not admit it. But I mean, I think he's going to be the guy who's like clutching a golden statue when he's in his 50s. I really do. Yeah, I think he's a monster, and he's doing commercial stuff right now, but he's got features in him, man. He's got narrative work in him that is going to, like, it's going to be stunning. So anyway, I DP'd a film for him the last 6 weeks or so.
Oh,
and
a full feature?
Yeah, it's a documentary feature. Cool. and
oh, that's fantastic, man. Congratulations. I mean, I'm just
saying, first of all, like, nice.
Like, yeah, that's, yeah. That's so good. I shot three features this year, which is really funny because I DP'd three features, and each one of them were kind of flip sides of the same coin, which was, which I know I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. I'm trying to be a good storyteller here, but
you're fine, man.
But the moment I was feeling stuck between directing and DPing. Like, I don't know how to move forward. And I got a lot of bites this year from agents, DP agents, and they all like would come sniffing around and then that'd be it. I wouldn't hear anything else. And I'm like, I'm booking. I like got a Spotify commercial, national commercial. Like I DP'd
without
like
an agent,
without an agent. Company? I got, yeah, no production company, no agent. I got these three films with like pretty serious people and like all this stuff. Like, why isn't anybody like, I don't understand. And yet I was in that like reactive space, not the proactive space. Just like, why isn't someone calling me? Knowing, like, forgetting that like nobody gives a shit what you're doing. And so in the best way possible, like it's fine. It's good actually. Like,
like they're actively not giving a shit. They're just not giving a shit.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And so anyway, but I was doing this job with Elliot and, you know, it was a tough job. It was really tough. And, it was definitely a big stress for me. And about halfway through the job, he just looked at me and he was like, dude, I'm really glad I hired you. You're a great fit for this job. For sure. But he's like, you know, you're a director, right? And I was like, well, yeah, you know, yeah. And he's like, no. Like, you're a director. And if you're DPing because you got into it and you want to, like, you know, learn from other directors, like your film school or whatever, then awesome, because you're a great DP. He's like, but if you're DPing because you're hiding from directing, well, you got to direct, man.
Hell yeah.
And wow. And I think that for me was fantastic. Like just a punch right between the eyes, you know? And so, and I'm right in the middle of it, but I will say that the very long answer to your question is that the last year has been that exact thing that you described, which is, you know, I was coasting by on excited energy, basically. The newness of it has kind of worn off. And now it's this kind of vast expanse of, okay, like
owning it.
Yeah, man.
Oh, wait, and this is happening.
Oh my god, like I'm gonna have to like put a stake in the ground and say this is what I'm doing. And so I think for me that is what's been happening right now. Ooh. And it's kind of terrifies me to talk about it
because that's really interesting to me, because like that is sort of like hiding in plain sight of like a bunch of different doors is kind of like a strategy I employ sometimes. Frankly, not that I'm like that critical of it, because I don't think that's productive, but like I do a bunch of stuff and therefore like I kind of don't have to own any one thing. And it's like, yeah, so it's a similar thing, maybe not exact, but yeah, a similar idea where it's like, okay, wait, I am this, like, hi, hey, it's me. And then now you have to like pit yourself, or not pit yourself, but like you are in the same league as everyone else who specifically does that. And you know, it's a big step. I mean, congrats on doing that movie, but also just on like taking the leap, stepping forward, like owning it, even just talking about it now, like it's good. It's positive, man.
Yeah. And when we talk about culmination, it's like, it's naturally like the end of something. That's what culmination means. It's coming to a point, coming to a destination. Yeah. And I think since you never really stop growing and evolving your craft, when we talk about culminations, it's kind of a decision point. It's a balancing act. It's a moment in time where you actually have to make a decision that will end a part of you in a way. And I don't mean to sound kind of fatalistic or final about it, but you just mentioned it. You actually had to confront this idea, and no longer it was the culmination of Booth as you knew it.
Dude, I'm picturing Ryan like sneaking up, sort of what was that Jesse Eisenberg movie where there's two of him? It was a fantastic movie. It was based on the play.
Really? Yeah, I never saw this.
It was really weird and lovely. But I was just picturing Ryan sneaking up on young Booth in the night and just smothering him. Like, just smothering him, saying, I'm sorry, I love you,
The old Booth must die so that the new Booth can flourish. That's kind of what culmination is, right?
Oh, wow. And then I'm picturing him throwing him into a plane, as we talked about before, and just letting it on fire and just sort of like letting the prairie burn, and then like just like a metaphor on a metaphor. And then
I might have just gotten lost a little bit, but
I was talking quick, to be fair.
To ground us, we were inspired for this next this next part of the conversation by some work that you're doing.
And Vince, I'm wondering if I could set the stage even more here.
Okay, I would love that.
So it's toward the end of the week, right before the weekend, you know.
And theoretically.
And the sun's kind of going down. The smells are sort of, the night smells are starting to pick up.
It's fall.
It's fall. It's that time of year. And as the sun sets, a couple of other lights go on. It's Friday night.
It's Friday night, and they turn on the lights. We're inspired not only by the fact that you had a flirtation with possible Friday Night Lights stardom, but that you're also doing the Kings of Texas documentary. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to talk to you about high school sports. No better state in the union to have an opinion on them than in good old Tejas. And maybe you, Mr. Booth, are a similar way.
And to clarify, we do what is called an off-topic topic every week. In mm-hmm. the middle of the show, we like to explore a topic that is not necessarily germane to the topic.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
And here we are.
Well, what do you want to talk about?
Did you play any? And do you like them to this day?
Ah, okay. Yes, I did. I played lacrosse in high school.
Blacksboro.
Spoons, as they call it.
Okay, sure. What? So in Texas, what happened?
Sorry. I don't mean to interrupt. In University of Minnesota? In University
you
of Minnesota.
You do mean to interrupt. Like...
Yeah, I mean to interrupt. Yeah. I apologize for interrupting.
Okay, there you go.
They call it Spoons here.
Oh, interesting. That's a college Vince went to, University of Minnesota. Really? Mm-hmm. Okay. I've never heard that once. Have you heard that, Rabbit?
I have not heard that. But I will say that the Texas version of lacrosse, when I played, it was still kind of meandering its way down from up north. And basically what it was is a way for football players in the springtime to just go out and like beat up a bunch of skinny kids, and so
sounds lovely.
So we had some incredibly it was an incredibly aggressive league because it was basically all linebackers who played defense. Ooh. And then the kids who had any ball control handling skills were just getting obliterated by these guys. But
that
I played
gruesome actually.
Yeah, it was kind of incredible. I distinctly remember one play. I played a tack, which is the offense, and I got hit pretty hard, and so of course it was like a tit for tat, and so our defense, a good friend of mine who's a linebacker for in high school, hit this kid, and while he's flying, he just squarely just hit him in the chest, sent him off his feet. He's flying through the air, and as he's coming down, he hits him on either side of his helmet with his stick as he's flying through the air, and he broke his collarbone in both places. And that kid ended up going home in an ambulance that night.
Wow.
I just remember being like, this might be a little bit more than
that's
bargaining for.
Brutal.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But yeah, no, I played lacrosse. I mean, I'm a team sport guy, so you know, and honestly this I mean, I attended football games. I did not play football. My mom would not let me play football because she was paranoid about concussions even back then. And so, which is funny because I played lacrosse and that was worse for sure. I think what's interesting about sports to me, and I don't actually watch sports in a, I don't have a team. I'm not super, I don't actively follow kind of professional or college sports, but I do think that attending games is really interesting. And I just think that, there's so much drama that happens. It's just high pressure situations. I find it to be endlessly interesting from a storytelling perspective. And I think Friday Night Lights, in the same way that Friday Night Lights to me is one of my favorite shows because of all the things that happen off the field. That's kind of what we were hoping to bring to the table, with this kind of doc series that we're doing, called Kings of Texas. And it's proven to be true so far, which has been, it's been a really, really inspiring project to work on.
Right.
For sure.
Right. I see a lot of the same parallels in terms of when you're playing sports and you're competing, specifically competing, you're super engaged, you're required to be. I think directing in that way it's similar. I really love that because you get on set and you have to be, you're required to be engaged the entire time. There is no sort of sitting on the bench.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Vinny, were you Well, I wanted to guess, but I don't know. I mean, I know you play tennis now. Did you play tennis in high school?
Sure did. 4 years.
Wow.
4 years of varsity tennis in what very well may be the worst tennis conference in the entire United States of America.
Unbelievable. Truly. It's awesome. Very, almost directly north of Texas, are we? We're pretty close, right?
Yeah, you're straight up there.
Yeah, I mean, we piss in the Mississippi and it comes on down.
You get the benefit. Yeah, I was a tennis player for 4 years, and I love that a lot. I still play tennis to this day every summer. I'm in a rec league or USTA leagues. And then I was a soccer player also, but I was so dreadfully bad that I just quit and started managing the girls' tennis team.
Unbelievable.
Instead. Oh, nice.
That's like such a Vince move, dude. I love that. Like, that's nice. Amazing.
Yeah, so I never got the, like, team sport thing. I was never that into it. I'm much more of an individual sport guy. I don't like to let people down. And,
yeah, totally. Yeah. I played tennis my freshman year and discovered my major weakness, and the reason that I quit playing tennis was my second serve. Had no second serve. So if I got my first serve in, I'd be fine. I could volley, no problem. But man, if I had to put that, I just like would dink it over the net. It was bad.
That's a strategy I still employ to this day. So don't think it's that inconceivable. Grant, what about you?
Let's see. Well, the funny thing for me is I kind of, what?
You're an Iceman.
Oh yeah, I'm an Iceman. But I was going to say, I felt like my creative career or my creative life sort of took form right after high school sports ended, because I had this big void, and I realized, oh wow, I actually am a super creative person. I was applying a lot of that energy in this world, because like I was very much like a kind of showboaty, not showboaty, that's the wrong, but like I didn't want to, like, just scoring or even winning was never that interesting to me. It was more like, ooh, how did you do it?
Style over substance.
Totally, man.
Yeah.
I was like a two sport captain. I played soccer and hockey, and like I took those relatively seriously, as far as like I tried super hard and like leadership was important. But I was also not like the hockey captains. I was an assistant captain. The other guys were like super like militaristic, like serious.
They lived hockey. Hockey was it.
Yeah, I was like sort of the like comic relief in general. but also like, I mean, I was a good player.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I was very scrappy. I think in a lot of ways, dude, I think there's so many parallels between the way I played sports and the way I like try and approach sort of everything else I'm doing, which is like worked super hard, not necessarily like training all the time, but you know, I trained, of course, I practiced and put my time in on that. But it was like, I like worked super hard in the game, just super scrappy, you know?
I think it also can't be understated just how much of a religion hockey is in this part
crazy,
of the country.
Yeah. So we are in the state of hockey, as they say, Mr. Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it was a bit of, like, looking back on it, I'm like, oh, wow, that was kind of, like, a cultish kind of, like, thing. But that's, it was, like, awesome. Like, now that I'm removed from it, I was like, oh, wow, that was, like, a sweet culture to, like, come up in, because it was so serious. And, like, I played pretty seriously. Like, I played, like, selects and, like, all these other things. And, like, you meet people from all over the state, especially as you get into, like, the higher tiers of it. And it's, like, unbelievably competitive. Like, I did, like, a week-long camp at, like, the University of Minnesota that was just, like, sort of like the most competitive players in the state. And it was like, wow. Like, I mean, dude, a lot of these guys, a lot of people in Minnesota are trying to go pro. Like, that's their life. It's honestly, in some ways, it's the equivalent of football for hockey.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, sounds like
it's really interesting. Wow. Mm-hmm. I just realized that.
It's fascinating. And it's interesting to look back, because so many, even in my tiny podunk town where no one had any athletic talent at all.
Phillips, Wisconsin.
Don't look it up. It's not worth it. No one had any athletic ability. No one had any future in sports. People still felt like athletics were the culmination of their worth as a person and their potential and their maybe future, their ticket out. And so it's always fascinated me just how invested people get in high school sports. Even myself, who not really the sporting type, was really important to me back then. And it's just interesting how it evolves and how your passions sometimes can remain, carry over, and sometimes go completely away from it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Totally. But, you know, ultimately you just sort of transfer along. You just keep on going.
You just keep moving. Interesting. I wouldn't have taken you for a lacrosse player. I didn't even know they had lacrosse down there. But that's
it,
cool.
Yeah, it was a different brand, definitely a different brand. I went to a really, really big high school, so my graduating class had 1,500 kids in it.
Whoa.
And it was like one of those things where, like, if you didn't pick what sport you were playing by the time you were like 10 years old, there's no way you're going to make it to varsity. And so, like, the basketball team when I was a senior in high school, the varsity guys, they'd been playing together since literally they were like 9 or 10 years old. And so just because there's so many people, it's so competitive. And so at the time, lacrosse was like a club sport. And so, you know, a bunch of guys would just be able to try it out. And we kind of created our own little Bad News Bears version of lacrosse. And it was really great. I've always kind of enjoyed that. Slightly off of kind of mainstream, a little bit scrappier version of kind of, you know, what everybody else is doing, basically. And so lacrosse for me in high school was that thing, for sure.
That's how like a polymath succeeds. I mean, that's the approach I'm taking too. I mean, in general, like, I feel mm-hmm. like if you're not going to specialize for disciplines that require almost the most specialization, you kind of have to do that.
Yeah, totally.
So you can see the parallels in both.
Yeah,
of
so past. Like I knew what I was doing when I was 16, apparently.
Nice. Well, that was enlightening. That was cool. Cool to look back on a piece of our past. But let's look forward
You know, it's like
let's turn the gaze ahead.
All right, everybody, spin around 180. Hold on, we're gonna move our mics.
All right, that's
Anyway,
I just did a 720. I'm
wow,
sorry.
Respect.
Holy. Yeah. Hit the slopes, maybe.
You
instead.
Might want to consider
Yeah,
career.
Exactly.
Let's jump back into some last thoughts with a pair of questions that we ask all of our guests.
Two of them.
Just the two.
A couple.
And you can just answer these in order when you, however you want, Ryan.
Like you say, whenever you want.
Whenever you get the chance. But actually, it's right now.
It's sort of timely.
After I ask them. The first question is, how can those listening to our show support you? And the second one is, if you would want our listeners to take one thing away from your time on the show, what would you have that be?
Oh, my God.
The first one's an easy one, though. How can the people listening support you, Ryan Booth?
I don't know about that either, though.
Well, I mean, okay, let me pitch you for a second.
Yes,
I think one way they can at least... any creative will benefit from this, especially if they've listened thus far into the episode. Go get familiar with your work, which is beautiful. I mean, I guess we kind of glazed over that, but like your filmmaking is really fantastic. And like, it's, I will say even personally, oh, nice. This is really helpful for me to look at. I remember when I was cutting my last reel, I think you were listed on like one of five reels on Story and Heart's site, right? Or something like blog they did. And I was like, oh, this is really helpful for me from a storytelling standpoint as to like how to construct a reel, or this is one approach. And then, you know, your whole story is inspiring in that. And, you know, like you said, you didn't specialize when you're whatever. And it's like, so just looking into your work, I think, is can pay dividends to someone. So I think, what is it,
ryanbooth.tv.
.tv. We will link that. And then, you know, following you elsewhere on the internet, I think you're an interesting dude online, and you're pretty generous with the stuff you're working on and the insights you're getting.
So there's at least a start.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is I don't know. I feel like I'm moving into this. I think the reason that I say I don't know is because I'm not selling anything right now. I'm not, I don't have a film coming out that I want people to see. I'm kind of actually moving into this kind of, I'm in the early stages of starting my first feature. That I would direct, and that I think is, I'm like looking at a terrifying void of loneliness ahead of me, as opposed to needing a bunch of things from people.
So, but that's the thing, though. Even somebody like Ryan Johnson, I feel like he's really engaged online, and I mean, he sometimes like has referenced it as like, you know, it's the classic like addiction of the internet, but it is like, I think, helpful to just have a community of people who are interested in the same stuff. And I think you have that to a degree, but joining along in that community and like supporting and following along for when there is new stuff or there are other things, I think that's like pretty valuable.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would say, like, the existential, what I would like from people is I just think collectively, what I've really appreciated about some of my kind of like filmmaking heroes is how the guys that I kind of really look up to are incredibly honest and open people. And I just think, like, it doesn't have to be for me, but I think if for each other, if we could not pretend our lives are so awesome all the time, I think in general, that would be really helpful for everybody. Because this journey that we're on trying to figure this shit out is really tough, and it's really easy to look at other people and think that they have more figured out than you do, and that's generally just not true. And I think if that we could all just collectively go, okay, maybe we could like tone it down a little bit in terms of like implying that we have more figured out than we do, I think that would be like, that would be amazing. That would be beneficial for all of us forever.
Well said. And hey, guys, if you heard that, do it, try it out, and you'll be supporting someone who deserves support.
I mean, certainly. I mean, that was sort of a last thought. I'm sure we can maybe get you to chime in here, but what you said there is very, very valuable. And I think it's somewhat of what we seek to do on the show is to kind of illuminate the reality and the struggles and just have like kind of frank conversations with people who mostly are super high achieving, super quote unquote successful. But I think it's just sort of like pulling back the curtain and go, oh, like, look, we're all humans. And I will say, like, from, I mean, a multitude of like personal experiences with people who are like high performing, but even just this last week, like hanging out with these guys, hanging out with Sufjan, hanging out with like Gallant, and like, just seeing how like real and how like daily struggles like affect them. And it's like not, it's not the pedestal that we kind of referenced before. Mm-mm. of, you know, oh, you'll become a National Geographic photographer and then you'll be happy. We talk about this all the time in the show, but it is the reality. It's like, we are all just constantly struggling, but I think acknowledging that struggle, and having community and sharing that struggle, and then sort of like leaning into it and loving the struggle, kind of falling in love with the process, like you said, like that is the game to me. Like that's kind of what makes us all okay. It makes everything okay. And it makes everything even sometimes much better than okay. It makes it good.
It absolutely does. I think the further down the like filmmaking path I go, the more I realize how out of control the final product often is. There's so many people involved. There's so many people's opinions involved. So many people need something that to make an idea from your head end up in a final product that you go, yeah, that's exactly what I envisioned from the beginning, is almost impossible.
Fucking insane.
But that shouldn't take the varnish off, right? That shouldn't be like
no,
moment where you're disappointed. That should make the process all the more amazing that it happens in the first place.
Yeah, totally. And I think because of that, that if you can attach your kind of hopes and dreams to the process of making the thing instead of the product, if the product happens to be awesome, then hallelujah. Like, you know, how amazing that like we were able to be a part of like bringing something into existence that didn't exist before. But I think that who you make your stuff with and how you do it is the thing that we should be focusing on, because that's the thing that we can actually control. You can decide if you want to be a shitty person or not. You can decide how you want to treat those people around you, and you can decide on how you want to help everyone be as good as they can be, because maybe, just maybe, if we all kind of like lock arms and walk in the same direction, then the product might be great. But I Rover think that right like over. an obsessive focus on the final product will paradoxically result in tragedy.
Well said. Know. That in and of itself is just a great encapsulating idea for what culmination is. Just,
yeah.
It's the sum of the work and the passion that you put into something. It isn't a product. The journey is its own product.
But it's super insightful to say, and it's the fucking truth. Most times is like, if you do it that way, if you do it the quote unquote right way, you get better results most times. So it's worth it for that.
It's happy how things work out like that.
Yeah.
And sorry about trying to make a shitty red over in the middle of something somewhat profound.
But we do appreciate
my way of dealing with reality.
Yeah, all of totally. Our defense mechanisms. We really appreciate you taking the time, Ryan. It's been an unbelievable conversation, really insightful, and honestly really fun and interesting.
I was going to say a treat, but I want to say a treat and a half.
One and a half treats.
Maybe we could give, hold on. I'm wondering if we could do 1.5 ship its today.
Oh my.
So what
goodness.
Would that be? Would that be ship it?
I think we'll do like an echo.
We'll do the echo. He does the original.
So every episode, we sign off with our own personal mantra, ship it, and our guests say ship it to kind of sign us off. And so we're going to ask you to do the same. And now I guess we're going to do a backup.
1.5. It's going to be our first 1.5 ship its. This is kind of a big deal, Ryan. This is an exclusive. Wow.
So whenever you feel ready, give us a ship it.
All right. Ship it.
Ship it.